You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. For a complete list of episodes, visit pdxpod.com or find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Since leaving Apple Music, Gang of Four bassist Dave Allen has joined creative agency North. His new title is a long one. He's the Director of Artists and Music Industry Advocacy. The firm plans to launch a new music division, collaborating with artists and managers to create brand new revenue streams. Now, the future of music is seemingly unsure. Streaming services are popping up left and right. Dave has a vision for the future, and we'd like to hear more about that today. My name is Gregory Day, and you're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. Let's meet our special guest, Dave Allen. Do you still teach at the U of O?
Well, when I joined Apple, that had to stop. And that was kind of a big drag for me because Apple wouldn't allow me to speak in public or do that at the university or go to conferences and, you know, do keynote speeches, which I used to do a lot. It's just like Apple is Apple, like boom, shh, rules, handcuffs.
And that was for 2 years?
Four.
4 years? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. It started with Beats, you know, Beats by Dre.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, I joined Beats by Dre because Ian Rogers, the CEO, and then Trent Reznor, we've been friends for quite some time, both those guys, and they called me up one day and said, you got to come work for us. And I was like, well, I've got a job. It's not like I'm unemployed, you know. And so, yeah, I made that decision, and I'll give my wife credit for that too, because it was like, look, you know, hey, I've got this job already. I was at North, and obviously that's steady income, no worries. And then I'm going to join a startup, which is different, right? It's like if Jimmy Iovine couldn't find the money, we wouldn't exist, right? And he was beating the bushes every year, every month,
yeah,
and. And then, I don't know, 6 months in, yeah, like, oh boy, Apple decided to buy us. So I moved over to Apple Music. That was fine. The first 2 years were amazing. I had a really good time because we were launching something.
Yeah.
Which was an extension of the Beats Music streaming app.
You know, my role on the artist relations team was to just get artists and their managers to understand that this is a good thing. It's like, you know, the whole world has switched to streaming now, and to not be involved with us particularly would be a mistake. You know, like we pay, well, I'm not there now, but Apple Music pays more in royalties than Spotify. You know, it's a big company, and Spotify is a private company and has to be always funded by raising money, whereas Apple's got, like, you know, we just have a few billion lying around in the back of the couch there.
Spotify has really changed the way I experience music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of debate about Spotify. Lots of questions posed to you and mm-hmm. some of your talks. And but nothing current that I found. Has your opinion on Spotify evolved?
Well, I don't use Spotify.
You don't?
I never have. And it's not for any particular reason. Like, you know, I've always said that Apple Music and Spotify, they're not in competition, right? The only interesting part for me, like the essay I posted on LinkedIn recently, is about that attrition, that war of attrition, about getting people to subscribe. which you can also bring in Tidal at this point, right?
If
you
want Jay-Z's.
Yeah, Jay-Z's outfit, yeah. I mean, I haven't heard Jay-Z's new album because it's exclusively right. on Tidal, right? So I'm reading all these things about it, but you can't hear it. And I'm not going to sign up for that because it's very expensive. And I don't need high quality, the codec, you know, like an right. MP3 can go up to, you know, pretty high. And then they want to do a more like a FLAC, you know, FLAC. Right. And it's like, I don't need that. I mean, not least because it'll eat up all my freaking data plan, right?
I love that you get the generational shift. You talk about an 8-year-old kid experiencing mm-hmm. music,
yeah,
not knowing what a CD is.
Yeah.
You know,
well, because at my age, and you know, I'm older than you, I'm sure, but the fact that downstairs I've got all my vinyl and a really cool you know, I've got a Technics deck and a really cool hi-fi system. I like experiencing music that way. It's almost like the slow food movement, right?
Right.
It's like it's a slow music movement. You have to get up and turn that thing over, right? And
great way of putting it.
Listening, and you have to be bonded to it. And I think my frustrations. Like with Apple Music and why I left was, and that was on my own volition. You know, I just decided I need to do something else because it's like, all right, we're doing great with Drake and Chance the Rapper and Frank Ocean. I mean, this is all good stuff.
Yeah,
but Trent and I had always talked about the next 10,000. Like, what are we doing with the up and coming artists, right? And that I have said many times to people, it's like, I thought Apple Music would be my end of career job. I just keep going until I feel like I want to stop working or something, right? But it was like, well, we're not really helping what I thought we could do. Because I figured that if Apple can't solve this problem in streaming music, then no one can. Arcade Fire can do arenas, right? They're like, you know, in the alternative rock world, they're very big. And then just keep on going down. There's lots and lots and lots. But then you get further down, and it's a struggle. If it's all just streaming and you're not getting paid very well,
right.
It's very difficult. And, you know, clearly things have dropped off. Now, I'm not saying the recording industry is in trouble. Clearly, it's not. You know, it just keeps going, and they've got all the big artists. But on the lower end of things, it's a struggle. And so what we're doing at North is trying to get new revenue streams for artists. Like, we want to get the money in their pocket. We want to cut out the middlemen.
That's what I really like to hear. It's going to go...
Everyone does.
Right. The concept is really, really... I think it really resonates with folks here in Portland because there's so many great bands.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I've seen incredible high-energy shows and small, tiny little venues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fertile ground for a service like this. Mm-hmm. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah. Do I not look excited?
I, you know,
that's only because yesterday was July 4th. Okay,
it's a rough night.
Yeah.
I'm on like 4 hours of sleep.
I'm still recovering. Yeah.
getting involved with Beats Music, mm-hmm. did that, was it just a text message from Trent Reznor?
No, it was a phone call from Ian Rogers, the CEO. And Ian has been in, he's been long term in the music tech world. And I dealt with him when I was at Intel back in 2000. So, but prior to that, we were friends anyway. Yeah. I brought him in. I had a record label in LA through Gold Mountain Management.
World Domination?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And,
you know, nice title, by the way.
Yeah. We didn't dominate the world, but we had a good time trying. And then Ian hit us up, and he was basically a web designer. And, you know, he looked at our crappy sort of website that I think the general manager had knocked up. It's like a, it's just like a GIF. It's like one thing, you know. And so I said, yeah, you know, like, you know, throw us a proposal and all that good stuff and some design ideas and we can look at it. And it was really good. So we had him build our site. But then I introduced him to John Silver, who managed within Gold Mountain, managed the Beastie Boys, Sonic Youth, Nirvana, the whole gamut, right?
Right.
And they all needed websites. So we flew Ian in to, you need to come meet these guys. Like, it's bigger than my little indie label, right?
Right.
And so we became great friends. So we still are. And now he's at Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy as the global digital director.
You know, it seems like everybody is turning to Squarespace now for their websites.
Yeah. My own website, the IamDaveAllen.com website,
it's beautiful,
built on Squarespace. It's very simple.
It is. It's beautiful. Great picture. Who took that picture?
That was Chris Hornbecker.
Chris Hornbecker,
yes. He actually works out of North as well. He has a space there. And he is, he's a phenomenal photographer. It's, you know, he does all the basketball, like Nike. He does all the shots that you see. Yeah, he's just amazing.
And what's the culture like at North? I'm curious. I'm familiar with the firm.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your role there now? What's the culture like? Is it a bunch of weirdos or at it?
My job is to stay clear of advertising. Late 2016, I ended up, Mark Ray, one of the principal owners, and Rebecca Armstrong is the other partner owner. But Mark and I don't know what, how it came up. It just was like, just before the holidays, end of 2016, Mark had hit me up just coincidentally and said, hey, I haven't seen you for a while and let's get a drink before the holidays and all that. And so, yeah, I hooked up with him at Solo Club in the Northwest there.
Okay.
And we were just shooting the shit. And, you know, he's asking me how it's going. And I said, well, you know, to be honest, Mark, I would think by April of 2017, I'll be out of Apple. I'm really not that happy. And Mark immediately said, well, why don't you come back to North?
When was this?
The end of 2016.
Okay.
Just before the holidays. And, you know, I said, well, I can't move from, you know, this where I've been in music to advertising again, right?
Yeah.
Because I was their digital strategist before. And since I left, they've got other, you know, they've got different folks in there who can do that. There was no room to do that anymore, but not that I wanted to do that. But we came up with this idea that I'd been working on, which had been spurred by James Mercer from The Shins. I was in his studio, his home studio, and we were jamming on some Shin songs, like different versions of the last album. And then James was saying to me, like, how's your music licensing going with your Gang of Four catalog? And I was just laughing, like, are you kidding me? You know, it's like in 2005 when the band reformed, Sofia Coppola's people reached out because she was working on Marie Antoinette, the movie.
Right, I've heard this, yes. Yeah.
And apparently as she was writing the screenplay, she was playing Natural's Not In It on loop
right,
all day long, right?
Yes.
And I only really found out about it in two ways. At the time, our kids were in middle school, and they came. I think Dylan, my son, had come home and said, hey, everyone's talking about your band, Dad. Like, what? And I was like, okay. And then I saw a piece in People magazine where they'd interviewed Sophia on what she was up to with this movie. And then she mentioned us in there as that's what she was doing. I'm listening to this song over and over and over. Yeah. And then suddenly my ex-manager, Ron Stone, is calling me and going, hey, man, we got to make hay with this, you know. I think, okay, you know, not really, but that was an interesting time.
You've got a very eclectic taste. I looked at your playlist you posted.
Yeah.
On one of your blogs.
All over the place.
Yeah, yeah, you're all over the place. I love that. You're definitely not stuck in your ways.
I live in public, yeah.
Yes.
No, I'm not stuck in my ways.
No, and it's so easy to be that guy and to be stuck in time. Mm-hmm. And it's really, what I get from you is you're very pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sort of looking for ways to make things work, and you've got a streak of positivity.
I make it very clear to people that my glass is always half full.
Yes.
I don't see any reason to have the glass half empty.
Right.
Because that doesn't work. And I think a lot of that's come trickling down through this, like all my books and all my reading. And just recently, I've been fascinated with older books now. I'm buying books from the 1920s, you know,
like authors. Leather-bound?
They're re-released in paperback now.
Okay.
I'm not getting the originals. But what you're looking at up there is pretty much all of those books are first editions. Right now, what I'm seeing is there is a big surge in reading, and people want books,
yes,
right? And wherever they get them now, books are not going away, right?
You know, I interviewed the founder of Microcosm Publishing, and he says that people are always trying to tell him, you know, about the business, like it's, you know, books are no good anymore. Like, you know, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Books are doing very well.
Yeah, and they're very important. I mean, you know, actually, when we were on tour with the Gang of Four, you know, we'd all jumped out of college, we didn't get our degrees and so on, but back in the day, all you could do was take books. So if you're stuck in a van driving 500 miles to a gig in America, like, you better take some books because it can get very boring, you know.
Have you contacted Portia Sabin? Are you aware of her podcast, The Future of What?
Well, Portia and I are friends, yeah.
Oh, great. She has this fantastic podcast.
Kill Rock Stars, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she does such a wonderful job and comes at it from every angle.
No, she's great. I did for the Grammys Northwest up in Seattle. She interviewed me on stage when I joined Beats because there was this issue around streaming, right?
And yes.
And at the time, she was not exactly 100% happy with the idea of streaming. But
right.
It wasn't too long after that, though, the Band of Horses, not Band of Horses,
she's
Horse
bullish
Feathers.
Now.
Horse Feathers, right? They were on tour, and all their fans were saying, hey, we can't find your music on Spotify or streaming services, right? And then Horse Feathers came back and said, we need to be in these services because the fans are, that's how they access it now. Like, they might buy a vinyl record at the show or a CD.
It's true.
And then, I don't know if it's a direct sort of quote really, but I think Portia came around to like, let's jump into streaming. And I think that's been a big move for her because it's like now the money's coming in.
Yes.
You know,
She seemed very happy with the streaming services. And
yeah, I love Portia. She's awesome.
Yeah. No, I love that show. And she was a fun interview, too. She's very, very good on radio or a podcast.
She's a doctor.
Yeah, she has a very interesting background.
She does. It's just like
very.
Yeah. You can like, wow. That's like, I'm just a musician and you're a doctor.
You met her husband?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You met everybody.
Well, of course. I mean, I'm not just saying that. It's just like everyone in, you know, the music world. My long career is like
right
so long. It's like, geez, you know.
I love the advice that you give to musicians. You talked about a distribution company, stem.is.
Yeah.
I looked briefly at their website. What's your experience with them?
Well, we are, at North, the new business arm that we're building, North Music, is right now it's run by me and Steve Rona, the executive producer.
Steve Rona.
Okay. Rona.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the story. It's like when I was at Apple Music, we did the Endless film for Frank Ocean. That very long 1 hour, 20 minutes of Frank basically building a set of wooden stairs, right? Which now, looking back, was like, oh, that's the escape route. Because that was his last album for Universal Records under his deal.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, we didn't know that was his last album. And then the next weekend, he releases Blonde. And he'd sampled two Gang of Four tracks. So I was in the mix there. I knew this, but I couldn't tell anybody. And then... You know, Universal gets all up in it, calling Jimmy Iovine and going like, "What's going on? You've stolen our artist. You've distributed his music." And he's like, "No, we didn't know. We don't even know how that was distributed." Hmm. And then in February of this year, the New York Times Magazine had an interview with Stem, three young people, led by I think a 27-year-old woman. And two other guys there, and they'd already been doing really well in the world of startups and, you know, certain apps and things like that. And then they'd raised a lot of money. And then they are, which I'd like to feel I am at the moment, they're problem solvers, right? And they look at things. They look at, like, the recording industry or even the auto industry. It's like, how can we make things better? And they landed on the publishing world, right? Yeah. And it's archaic. And that's how they looked at it. It's like, my Lord, this is like something from the 1800s that's never been updated, right? And so they've jumped in and became distributors. And so they were the ones who released Frank's album. All over the world, global, by, you know, getting it into like Asia and South America, like streaming music services you never heard of.
Please be brilliant.
Yes.
I know you've said this before, but I love this concept.
Yeah.
Because it's about, you know, recognizing your strengths, going with it. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear you elaborate just a little bit more about this idea, this concept.
Well, it goes back to the glass half full concept, right?
Right.
It's like, there's no point waking up every day feeling that you can't get things done. And then you really have to work hard to make sure that doesn't happen. And when I say work hard, that's where people get disillusioned. Like, oh my God, it's going to be a uphill struggle and all that. And it's like, no. Like I was just reading something today that hit on it. It was a poet I was reading and it's just like, you just have to believe You just have to believe. And when people say to me, okay,
like self-belief?
Yes.
Yeah.
You do. And when people say to me, like right now, again, it's really intense. Like, oh, why did you leave Apple? That's an amazing place to work. It's like, well, if you really follow me, it's almost like every 4 years I go do something else.
Right.
Right. And then they say, oh, there you go. Landed on your feet again. It's like, no, I didn't jump out of an airplane without a parachute.
Yeah.
Right.
You're a pragmatic guy.
I know what I want to do. And yes, I walked away from quite a lot of money from Apple, but if money's the only incentive, then you're not going to be brilliant, right? If that's the only incentive.
Well, you said it yourself.
I'm not saying I'm anti-capitalist, but right. At the same time, you know, I am a European socialist, so, you know, like you. You're from Manchester. We're in this together, buddy.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? It's just like, be positive as best you can. And of course, you're going to get into a slump at some point. You really are. Right. Like, you can't avoid the slumps, right? I mean, right now with North Music, we've been pressure testing this for about 4 months. And touch wood, we've had no pushback. Because artists and their managers want new revenue streams. And that's what we're bringing. But maybe there's a bigger agency than ours that jumps in and gets ahead of us, but it doesn't matter. It's still glass half full, right? Keep going. Doesn't matter. Because they're going to need somebody like me anyway. I have all the, after Apple Music for 4 years, I've got all the relationships, all of them, mm-hmm. globally. It's amazing. And I never, when I started, never thought that would be something I would use. I just figured I'll keep pushing for Apple. But now it's like, geez, my Rolodex is huge, you know. Like, and that's great, right? I mean, look.
What else do we have?
I don't want to be pompous people? About it being that's being brilliant. It's yes. just be positive and don't listen to people who are negative. And my long career in music has got me everywhere, like this, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, Gang of Four was never massively successful. So, you know, I shouldn't be living in this huge house in the hills.
Right.
But that came from just keeping going, right? Beyond the band.
Yeah, because you were in Gang of Four for what, 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I formed Shriekback.
Yeah, Shriekback.
Yeah.
A very underrated band.
A very underrated band. And
the people who like Shriekback love Shriekback.
Yeah.
A lot of obsessive.
People do. I know, yes. It's very interesting. But that was the band that we were bigger than Gang of Four. We just were not critically acclaimed. Like, we could play to bigger audiences than Gang of Four. The critics just didn't like it. It was like this early 80s sort of...
Dolly's Car sort of era. Was that, yeah, Dolly's Car?
Yeah, yeah. There's all sorts going on.
Great bass lines.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, I'll accept that I'm a great bass player. But, you know, we got money, you know, advances from labels and publishing, and I bought my first home in London on Clapham Common, right? And... that was a great investment. You know, I think I bought it for
£24,000.
Yeah. Right. And then I sold it to my brother at a discount for £90,000 because, you know, it's just like, I suppose I had a knack at looking at investments and what you can do. So it's not noble. I just want to give back. I've always wanted to give back. And maybe it's okay, my working class background. It's like,
yeah.
I didn't deserve this. Is probably a little earworm all the time. Like, yeah. How did I get from Kendall in Northern England to be here in Portland with...
It's an amazing city. It's an amazing country.
I know, but I mean the whole route to get here is just interesting to me. And it's not, I have no regrets. It's just like, wow.
You still feel that way.
But it, I mean, yeah, but it's a mixture of luck and talent and charisma when you're in bands, right?
Yeah.
How many bands don't make it, even though they should? You know,
yes.
It's just a different mix. And so here at North Music, again, I just want to get, I want to be able to get money into the pockets of the artists and cut out some middlemen, you know, who take their piece. It's like, what did you do? Oh, you made a phone call. Okay, so you want 50% for making a phone call?
Yeah.
That has to stop.
Yeah.
And that's actually a challenging statement, which I'll hear about, I'm sure. But it doesn't matter. You just got to fight. You got to fight. And that's fine. And when I was teaching at the U of O, when students graduated from my class and they graduated from the university, they get back to me and say, I can't find a job. I think, well, we went through that in class, right? But the smart ones would ask me to mentor them again. And then I would work with them. And it was always usually about their curriculum vitae, you know. It's just like, what's this? You're sending this to people? You know what I mean? There's nothing. I mean, yeah, you can't have a resume that it just says you worked at the the university's student union. That's not going to work. And then you worked on the local newspaper or something, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I said, there's nothing in here about you.
Yeah.
There's nothing in here about you.
Yeah.
And I would make them go away and come back, you know, a week later when I was back down in Eugene. And, you know, and suddenly it blossoms out. It's like, you know, one woman I got she got a great job in New York at an agency because she'd opened up to like, I love travel and I've got a photo blog and I've got a cooking blog. And all this, I said, see, now someone in HR can see that you're a broad-based person. Yeah. You're not just fascinated with advertising. There's more to you. Yeah. And then that happened many times where they got the jobs because everyone else was just throwing in a blank sort of
keywords.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a shame, but in fact, I would say now that I'm surprised the university didn't help them with their resumes.
Right.
And someone there should be saying, well, if I had a business and you gave me this, I'm not going to hire you.
It has that pragmatic approach again.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah, thank you. But it's not hard. I just did it last week at PSU. There was the you know, postgrads and...
graduation.
Yeah, but there was a bit of a speed sort of talk for 3 hours. Like, people could come in and show you their work and their resumes. And I did exactly the same thing. I was like, look, your work is great. Your resume's shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then they were kind of like, what? I said, well, there's nothing in this resume. You've just showed me your work. You're right. Sitting in front of me as a person, a human being, and you seem to be a very sort of interesting person.
Yeah.
There's nothing in your resume that practical reflects that.
You're right.
And if you think that that's going to land on an HR person's desk and they're going to hire you for that, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and they loved it. It's like, oh my God, yeah.
That practical advice is very rare.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, I don't mind doing that because, like I say, it's like...
Is that because you're you used to be a milkman? Is that
the milkman? Wait,
what? I read this on Wikipedia. I don't know if it's true that you used to deliver milk. Is this right?
No, that's wrong,
you know,
actually.
It's always wrong.
I know.
These little tidbits, they're always wrong.
I never delivered milk. What I did do was, what I did do was sneak out of bed at night, right? Get onto my parents' balcony and skittle down the onto the ground. And then go to Lancaster University to see bands like Queen, Mott the Hoople, T-Rex, and all that business. And then the only way we went down on a bus that we'd paid, you know, we all threw money in. And my parents didn't know I'd gone out all night. But the only way back was the bus wouldn't wait, right? We had to get on the milk train. literally the train that delivered the milk to our town.
So this is where this story came from.
Yes. Okay. They mixed it up, and we had to sleep for a while in the station waiting room because it came at like 4 a.m, but it got back to where we lived at 5 a.m.
Right.
So that was just enough time to climb back up through the window and pretend you've been in bed all night.
Okay.
Yeah. But that was my exposure to amazing music, and, you know, it's like I saw Queen opening for Mott the Hoople. We'd never heard of them, but just blew our minds.
You remind me of Morrissey right now, talking about his youth, watching shows, just thinking it's just a great way to grow up.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of Dave Miller at OPB. You were on his show years ago.
Dave Miller?
Dave Miller at Think Out Loud is the show.
At OPB?
Yes, at OPB. Yeah.
That was just when I joined Beats, I think.
That's right. Any thoughts on that interview?
I mean, in America only. Right? Gang of Four was seen as a Marxist band. And again, like we'd said earlier about that misconception about the milk train, the misconception with Gang of Four was when we were at Leeds University at art school, all of our art professors were Marxists. And that doesn't mean it makes you a Marxist, right? But we're very intrigued with what did it take to be. Like, these guys had done tons of studies with, like, what's it like to be an artist in Russia, for instance, post-Marx, and so on. What we were doing, the Gang of Four, was political with a small p. It was about your personal life. Like, how are your relationships? So, the most licensed track of ours is Natural's Not In It. And that whole song debates the idea of, like, you know, you got a shitty job, right? And so you wake up in the morning and, you know, you don't want to go to work. Now, there's a repercussion for that. That might mean you lose your job or you lose at least a day's pay. But then, you know, it's sort of like semicolon. I want to go to the beach. It's like, okay, you can go to the beach. Right. But again, you have to understand the repercussions of that.
Right.
But it doesn't mean anyone stopping you doing either of those things. Right. That's what we were talking about. And then it becomes relationships. Right. Natural's not in it. The whole idea of nature and nurture is fine. But if you're not happy or you can't make it work, it's not really your problem. It's societal problems. And then we get down to, you know, Margaret Thatcher comes along and there's billboards, you know, like political billboards, like Labour's not working. Sure. Now, that was a brilliant campaign. I'll give her that. Jeez. Like, it just showed you long lines of people waiting to sign on to the unemployment.
Right. It was terrible.
And you know that, right? And we were like,
depressing.
Okay.
The news was depressing.
But then, last one is Morrison's Supermarkets, right? So in Leeds, Morrison's I think that's where they're based, actually. And the billboards would say, the change will do you good. And there were coins on the billboard. Mm-hmm. Now, that meant spend your money here and you'll get, you know, more money back in a sense. Now, we use that in damaged goods. Mm-hmm. And it's not that difficult. It's not like we were extremely political, but then you come to America and they just freak out, right? I mean, to them, the idea of like, you know, a socialist setup, right? We have, that's right, we have free healthcare in Britain, and you can go to college really
cheap.
What
a concept.
Right. And then they would just go, oh, communists. But I've lived here long enough now, I mean, been a long time.
I just thought that was funny, Dave Miller constantly calling you a Marxist.
Yeah.
He said it like 4 times.
Yeah.
You know what? I love Dave Miller. He does a great job.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind if somebody wants to bring up Marxism like that. I would rather say, like, okay, you know, I've read and studied Marx. So if you're going to call me a Marxist, like, let's really talk about it.
My dad told me that he wrote his manifesto in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. He did. He did, yes.
Oh, you do know E. Cole Marx.
I
know, well,
that's really weird because I just read recently a guy who just died. He was another escapee from the regime in Russia, and he was teaching at Norwich University. But first of all, he ended up in Manchester because there was, I think it was Manchester University, there was some people that
gave him money or supported
him. Well, it wasn't so much that. He got a job there, but it was more like they wanted to be around these professors that understood that, you know, that sort of Marxist side of things.
Right.
But also, like, we're British and we do things differently, right?
We certainly do.
Yeah. And I find it, now I'm a dual citizen and
my
my children are
it's great.
Americans and my yes. wife. And I just find it silly that they can't understand what a socialist society can do.
Right.
You know, because it's the best system. Yeah. Again, people might hate me for saying that, but what? it's better than capitalism outright because you look at Norway and Finland and Sweden, they're still capitalists, but they share the wealth. They share the wealth.
Yeah.
And that's all you need. Like, so then they say, oh, but taxes are so high. It's like, well, you know what though? You can go to school for free.
You get something for your taxes.
And you have kindergarten for free and then they give you $20,000 a year.
You get some back. Yeah. You get something
it's
back.
It's like, so what? So taxes pay for things that we need to do. I mean, my dad, a couple of years ago died of lung cancer, but, he was a smoker all his life. So he knew that, you know, like, dang, I shouldn't have done that. But, they told him, you've got 6 months, get your thing in order. But he lasted 5 years and the system paid for everything. He had no out-of-pocket costs. And they were living in a because my mom had arthritis, and she's still alive. But, you know, they put in a because it was upstairs where they
take
lived.
Take care of you.
Put in a chair, chair lift, and
take care of you.
And they were giving money to their grandchildren because the government was giving them money.
Right.
It's like, we don't need this money.
You get that money, you put in back.
Yeah. Crazy.
What a country.
Yes, sir.
Dave Allen, this was so much fun. I learned a lot today. You're a very thoughtful guy, and I'm going to do a bit of research into Karl Marx.
You're going to dig into me now, right?
Yes.
And Karl.
Well, thank you again. And thank you for welcoming me into your home. This is a wonderful place.
Thank you. Yeah.
And thank you for listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. My name is Gregory Day. I will be here next week. Please join me.
I mean, you know, these things are good.
Yeah, get the word out for Music North.
Well, it's not necessarily just for that, and that's a good. That's the one of the reasons, obviously, to get the word out. But I mean, just then it gives me new thoughts about what you're asking me and how I respond. So, you know, it might
go into my
speech at Hamburg in September. You know, like
hopefully that's online. Hopefully that's online. So.
Yeah, I'll post it though.
Yeah,
I mean, after the speech, I'll post it. I'll post it on my website.